Good evening, everyone. We're at the very end of number 6, the very last one in number 6, which is 38. Don't seek others' pain as the limbs of your own happiness. This is what we took home. In other words, don't build our own happiness on the suffering of others. Don't rejoice in the suffering of others. Don't compare ourselves with someone else's history or fate. We don't know. So that's the very beginning, and we have a new face tonight. I want to welcome you. You came with Sonia?
No.
She just helped you find a seat. Mm. Yeah. How did you hear about us?
I wanted to come for a long time. I have two daughters at home.
Oh, I understand. I have three sons, so I know. I'm so glad you made it. Yay. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Ellie. Shubha.
Jeffrey.
Aaron.
Ken.
Samia.
Jeff.
Wendy.
Karin.
Isaiah.
And Angie. So we're in the middle of this book, as you might know, and one by one we take them home and watch our life as it unfolds and be our life as it unfolds in terms of these things. So one of the pointers of this is not to expect applause or depend on being praised for whatever we do. That's hard sometimes. If we've done a really, really good job, we really want somebody to notice it and get some sort of credit for it, but it actually is an opportunity to realize that what happens is happening through us, that we're not actually doing it. That the doing is the action, and we don't have to identify ourselves with it. In fact, the more we identify ourselves with our actions and our activities, the more confused we can become, and disappointed and angry and all the things that go with not getting enough credit or enough praise or enough something or other to make us feel more important than we are, actually. On the other side is about if we are abused in some way, that we accept that. Accept it with grace. That's also hard. And even the people that we are having a hard time with, or we don't like, or who don't like us, that still we can feel compassion for them. We don't usually or often, but we can. And the fact that we can is the door. That's our way in to freedom. So I wonder how it was for you all this week. or any week in terms of this particular point of view about compassion.
Different than I listened to your recording last night again, I missed last week. And last night it struck me that something in the wording of the section in the book was saying we shouldn't celebrate the advantage over another person or like a gain for someone else's loss. Does that sound like part
mm-hmm.
of the reading? And I just, the first thing that struck me was that our whole economy is based on that. The whole economy that we're living in.
Yes.
And
our whole culture.
Our whole culture. And that even, you know, even us liberal-minded, intelligent, whatever we call ourselves, listening to NPR, and still there's those NASDAQ numbers or whatever, and that's how they're rating the day, you know. And it's and even in a smaller scale, we're like, why can't I get this shirt for $10 and whatever, you know? There's the whole thing we tell ourselves. And we deserve this at the cost of whoever made it for
2 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that really struck me as like, how does everybody sit with that? Given this is our pride, how can a business person ever be a Buddhist and or you know, practice this way?
Well, some do. You know, there's the story of Buddha going upstream. Everybody else is going with the river, but we don't have to. And that not going upstream actually is, generally speaking, a lot more successful, if you're speaking of success, than the rapacious way that people think is the only way to go. It just feels counterintuitive to go the gentle, quiet, compassionate way. There's this survival notion in our body that says, no, no, we've got to protect this thing no matter what. And then you create a culture around that. And before you know it, loving kindness is out the window. It's gone. And then you have a culture that is, and you have, as Buddha said, a lot of suffering. And he looked at that and studied it for a long, long time, and he just saw how miserable it made everybody, including himself. You know, that Mara keeps showing up for us and giving us an opportunity to be the best in some kind of way. And if we go that way, then we're always like this with everyone and with ourselves. So this is all about teaching ourselves how to cultivate loving kindness. It's a work in progress. We can't just do it. And that's what these guidelines are ways of helping us find the way to prefer the loving kindness rather than the competitive way of our surroundings. And the more we express the loving kindness side, the more it expresses itself around us. That's the best part of it. That the Dharma is continually being expressed. And we do it naturally. I think we long for it and often respond to opportunities for it. As I just saw this afternoon, actually taking a walk with some friends, and an old gentleman was out in his yard, and I'd been wanting to meet him for a long time, so we hailed him and he came to talk to us. And one thing led to another, and his son came out also, who is ill. And one of my friends knew about that illness and had a friend who specialized in it. And one thing led to another, and telephone numbers were exchanged, and suddenly this whole thing opened up. And it was all spontaneous. But spontaneous from her side to just respond. She had heard of this thing, and she knew what to do, and she offered it. And I think that's what this is pointing to, not to some great big heart-throbbing thing, but just to respond to a situation as it arises and give what we can give. I heard somebody say not long ago that there are two things that we should always remember. One is gratitude, and the other is service. And service not meaning, again, some grandiose thing that we do, but just to respond to a situation as it arises, which means that we're exchanging ourselves for others. And that's what compassion means. That's the essence of this, that instead of making ourselves the top of the list and the best and the number one, that we drop that and there's no number one or number two at all. There's just us. Just us. No measure. No judgment. It takes a lot of practice, a lot of attention, a lot of being awake. But that's the essence of it. And especially in a culture like this, we have to really, really pay attention and notice when we have a selfish moment that we could have done without, but that happened. And just carry on as best we can. Yeah, it's a very good observation. This is a season for loving kindness. It's also the season of Buddha's enlightenment, which we'll celebrate on Saturday with an all-day sit. And I wonder what it is for you to meet this old ancient traditions in terms of practicing the Dharma. I just put up and decorated a Christmas tree that was delivered to me by my neighborhood, because everybody has to have the tree in my neighborhood. So, right?
Christmas tree club,
right? Yes, yes, right. Everybody has to have a Christmas tree. And Hanukkah is coming up, everybody has some sort of way of celebrating this dark time, which is all based on generosity and love. So, that's a big part of this also. How can we practice generosity and love if we're protecting ourselves too much? Or if we're trying to be better than somebody else, then we can't do it anymore. So then people try to decide, shall we give presents? What kind of present should we give? They gave me something last year, should I give something? They give all these things that we get tangled up in terms of this, what's basically a very, very simple acknowledgement of the force of love in our life. So finding ways of practicing the Dharma in terms of our culture is our challenge and our joy. But it's tricky because we don't have to make a big deal about it. We can just respond to a neighbor if a neighbor is there, or change the tire in your car when it goes down, whatever happens, just be there for it, with it, in it. Well, point 7 is how we do this. All the preliminaries are all just sort of laying the groundwork for why we do this and now we get the scoop. He calls it post-meditation, that it's about after we get up, which is always our question. How can we practice after we get up? That Zazen is a state of mind, and we can't maintain that state of mind when we walk around in the world. But that isn't the that state of mind that we think of as Zazen. That's not Zazen. Zazen is our mind, all of it, the whole of it. So it has many different aspects, one of which is the sitting and quiet aspect. But standing up, we're not sitting in quiet anymore, but we are still as fully, wholly present as we are on the cushion. And then have the opportunity to enact, allow the enacting of everything that was coming through us as we sit, to respond. And so we aren't not sitting when we walk around, we're just walking around as we sit, fully appreciating our mind in all its different aspects. the sitting side of it and the acting side of it and the spontaneous side and the deeply thoughtful side. There are many, many sides of our mind. And Zazen is the mind that includes all of it and that is always present. We become very aware when we sit of the wholeness, multipleness of us, the entirety of life itself. And then, of course, we focus when we get up in a different way. But it's the same mind. It's Buddha's mind. Buddha's mind. So he says, the guidelines of mind training have to do with how to proceed further in our everyday life. This topic seems to be connected with a general realization of how we can conduct ourselves properly in our relationships and in the general post-meditation experience. So I guess it's a little bit like Emily Post, you know, how we can behave, wear white gloves and know which fork to use. But it is actually not like that exactly. But we do need to know how. Even as a young child, we're always trying to figure out how, what's the right way to do it. And at first, it's what other people are expecting of us. But finally, we come to the place where we're finding out in our own inner life, in the depths of our own deep sensibility, what the right way is, what we long for. So number one, or number 39, is the first one in point 7, which is very simple. And this is homework for next week. All activities should be done with one intention. So that's really simple. I mean, gosh, after all this complication, all these different things we're supposed to be doing, there's just one thing. That's what Dalai Lama says, just be kind. That's really it. Just be kind. But he goes on, you know, resolve to begin developing compassion and empathy. And as Norman Fisher says, it's not about just being nice. It's not the Emily Post kind of, oh my dear, you know, it's being absolutely honest and authentic and clear and kind. And being serious about our own difficulties, our own foolishness, our own self-obsession. Being serious about really seeing how it is with us. And freeing ourselves. So it's a work, as Norman says, it's working toward a change of heart. I like that. I think that's what it's about. That our way in the world be with this kind of change of heart. We don't know what's coming next, but we can meet it, whatever it is, with kindness and empathy. So he talks about transforming the everyday to Dharma by my first example that I thought of was driving in traffic, just because I drove from Mountain View yesterday in the worst traffic I've ever seen. And I thought, okay, this is a good practice. Traffic is one of the best. Transforming the mundane into the Dharma. You could either be very annoyed by the whole system and the way it's working and the time it's taking and all the things that go through your mind with a very grumpy kind of mind. Or you begin to think about things in a compassionate way, meaning these people are just like me. They're all trying to get home. They're all hungry and tired. They all have problems. They're all, you know, hurting, or they're losing their mother, or they're, you know, all the things that people are going through in every one of these cars that is passing by. And the ones that are too fast, the ones who are young and foolish, the ones that, they are all some mother's child. Every one of them. So it's just a way of thought. It isn't anything fancy. It's just the way we think about what's happening. So I offer you this. If we want to do a spiritual practice, this is what I see as a spiritual practice. Be fully embedded in your life, fully committed to your life, and open to what you can do to help things along, and to make room in your heart for everybody else. So are there questions about this?
I have a question now too. Are you recommending that we adopt the intention of kindness in all our actions? To have one intention, and you're suggesting the intention is kindness?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's I think without it, nothing else works. See what happens.
I like the idea of being fully committed, because a lot of times I have one foot in and one foot out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's natural. Yeah.
But I feel better when I have one foot in.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. And you always have the opportunity. There's always a second opportunity, a second chance. So if we get lost in some sort of muck, we always can get out of it. And forgive ourselves for making a mistake. Endless mistakes. So we just do our very best. And it's not always perfect. Alas, alas.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you all make some time for the sit on Saturday. And I'll talk about Rohatsu Sesshin, about Buddha's experience under the tree, because I like that story so much. And of course, it's a story. We have no idea how true it is in our own way of trying to measure everything in scientific ways, but in terms of the way of the heart, it feels true. totally true. And it works in the most scientific way. It's the truth of how things are. So we'll talk about that on Saturday. If you can't come for all of it, just drop in for a part. The talk is after lunch at 1. So that's it.
Any word from Plum Village?
No, I haven't heard. Which is no news is good news. They said he was getting better. He's still in hospital. This is Thich Nhat Hanh. But he still was not well at all, but he is improving, last I heard. And there's something else to share, too. Don't forget. Oh, the date of Sesshin has been changed from the 8th to the 9th. Is that right? To the Friday, where it's Friday to Friday rather than Thursday to Thursday. So we'll publish that. Michael at Chikoji had to change the date so that they could fit another group in. So I'll nail that down with Michael, and then I will let everybody know for sure. But I hope you all can plan to come for that or a part of that too. So shall we do our sit?
Could we have some volunteers to help Saturday with setting up and dog, she's another doe on.
What time does it start?
9. At 8:30?
At 8:30.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Karen.
You'll be here too, okay.
Great. Super. 1 minute sit.